It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The most recent spate of political killings in America has us wondering about the connection between these crimes and the increasingly strident partisan rhetoric coming at us from almost every direction. What was your reaction to the violence we've seen over the past few weeks? Do you think that our political rhetoric and polarization have contributed to it? What do you think should be done to stop political violence and hate crimes? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Scott Strauss is the Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor of Political Science and International Studies at UW-Madison. He specializes in genocide, political violence, human rights, and African politics. Scott, welcome to the program. Appreciate you being here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
In the span of 1 week, we saw three politically, or maybe they were ideologically motivated crimes. There was the killing of two black senior citizens at a grocery store in Kentucky after the perpetrator had attempted to forcibly enter a black church, the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh, the attempted mail bombing of 12 prominent Democrats and one cable television network, CNN. So, Scott, how should we contextualize or understand these incidents? What's the common thread, if there is one here?
Well, I think at a minimum, it's extremely worrysome. Anytime someone murders someone else for political reasons in these ways, it's obviously incredibly worrisome and scary. I think it's probably worth making distinctions among some of these incidents. I think the one that happened at the synagogue was clearly driven by anti-Semitism and anti-immigration sentiment. I think the one that happened, the sort of mail bombings were clearly partisan in their targets. I know a little bit less about what happened in Kentucky, but I think that seems to be motivated by more anti-black racial violence. But I think all of these are signs of, a kind of apocalyptic sentiment among some members of the American public and, a sense of deep foreboding that is driving some people to violence.
As I look at some of these and read the accounts, I'm thinking that there might be a difference between politically motivated and ideologically motivated crimes. Is that a distinction that's fair to draw, or is it maybe not even useful?
I probably wouldn't draw too much of a distinction. I think that these are acts of violence. Certainly what happened in Pittsburgh and the pipe bombs are clearly political in nature, in the sense that they are seem to be for political purpose. They're trying to change politics. They're trying to take people taking action in their own hands. The perpetrators or the alleged perpetrators fall on the spectrum of the right. But I don't know how useful it is to think about this as, principally ideology driving this.
So what qualifies something as political violence?
I think it's the deliberate infliction of harm for a political purpose, very simply. And most people would think about, it gets attention when someone is murdered or when it's lethal violence. I mean, that's what people typically mean by political violence.
So at what point do we need to draw a parallel between these incidents and what we call terrorism?
I think terrorism is an apt term, particularly to describe, the events in Pittsburgh and what happened with the mail bombings. I mean, terrorism, classically defined, is the use of violence against a civilian for a political purpose in order to send a message, and committed by an individual or a non-state organization. And I think in these cases, you look at what happened in Pittsburgh at the synagogue. I think that this was attacks against civilians. This was for a political purpose. It seems to be designed to send a message, and it was committed by an individual. We don't have an organization behind these, behind these perpetrators, as far as I know. I think in terrorism studies, people would think of this as so-called lone wolf attacks, where you have individuals that seem to be radicalized and who are inspired by some, a set of ideas and take action into their own hands. But I think terrorism is an appropriate label for what happened.
So you mentioned lone wolf acts of violence. These things don't happen in a vacuum. So what else is going on here?
Yeah, I think I think we should all be asking ourselves that question. I mean, how could this happen, and what is this revealing about our society right now? And I think at the same time, you know, we don't want to jump to conclusions about exactly what motivated these individuals. But that said, I think we can, you know, fairly surmise that they are drawing from the broader political environment, and they are drawing from ideas that they're gaining access to online or in the public space. And those ideas are either reinforcing or enhancing or enabling or legitimizing their views. And I think that's what should give us all pause. And I think that it's really important right now for anyone in public office or anyone who's in the media or anyone who has a public role to exercise tremendous care and caution in the language that they use.
And then thinking about in those societies where terrorism is present and active, and unfortunately ours seems to be one of them, are there some commonalities? Are there some common traits across those societies?
Yes and no. I think you can see commonalities among some of the individuals. I mean, the sort of typical process of radicalization would be that you have an individual who is sort of alienated or humiliated, has a sense of victimization, and then latches on to a set of ideas and a belonging to a group and subscribing to a particular ideology or ideas, and thinking that there's going to be salvation in acting on those ideas and taking matters into their own hands. And so I think, you know, from what I know, and I think there's still a lot to learn here, I think that pattern seems to fit what happened recently in the United States, unfortunately. I think that, you know, beyond that, it's hard to say. I mean, you see terrorism in the context of civil war. You see it in authoritarian countries. You see it in democratic countries. You see it in higher-income countries. You see it in lower-income countries. So I think in terms of the kind of countries in which it happens, as far as I know, there's not a clear answer to, you know, is there a particular country in which it occurs?
Scott Strauss is the Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor of Political Science and International Studies at UW-Madison, and we're talking about political violence in America and where it's coming from and what might be done about it. Wondering what you think about all of this. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Join our conversation. You've mentioned terrorism and radicalization. Those are terms that we probably didn't even think about 30, 40 years ago. I mean, and yet now they have become common in discussions about these issues. Any thoughts on kind of how we progressed to this point where we have people being radicalized and feeling empowered to actually take action and commit violence against their fellow human beings?
I think that's the right question to be asking, and I certainly don't have all of the answers. I think that, you know, there is a current in American politics today that strikes me as extremely dangerous, and what we're seeing through these incidents is that there are people with deeply bigoted views who are having their ideas reinforced online or reinforced in the public sphere, and are feeling emboldened to act. I don't think we're at an epidemic level. I think these incidents happen together, and they're drawing our attention to them. But I think it's very worrisome and very scary, and it should be a real wake up call. I don't, you know, to answer your question, I think that, I don't think there's a clear reason why we're in this position, and why terrorism has become a more common parlance. Certainly after 9/11 in the United States, I think that particular incident drew a lot of attention in the United States to terrorism. But if you were to go around the world, whether it be Israel, whether it be the United Kingdom or other places, Sri Lanka, that there are longer histories of terrorism where these ideas and these concepts were more present than in the United States.
It seems like both Cesar Sayoc and Robert Bowers were influenced by ideas they got on in online communities. Should we be concerned about that? I mean, are there ways to curb that kind of speech? And is that even something we could consider?
I think we should be concerned about it for sure. And I think one of the things that seems true about the social networks is that they tend to increase polarization. They tend to reinforce views. They allow people to develop extreme ideas and feel as if they are validated in those ideas by finding other people online. The question of how you control them is a really difficult one. I think you're seeing some of the larger social media companies like Facebook and Twitter who are getting more, I'd say, aggressive in the way in which they are trying to clamp down on hate speech or speech or postings that would incite violence or that are deliberately false information. At the same time, I think you have to be really careful about, you know, you don't want these companies to be the grand arbiters of speech in the United States, which has a very long history of supporting free and open dialogue and speech. And I think they're in a tough spot. I think that the reason why a term like terrorism, I think, can be helpful in this context is that I think it points us to the seriousness of the issue, and I think that it would, I think, prompt more resources and attention to the kind of hateful and violent rhetoric that's happening in some of the dark corners of the web. And again, I think these incidents should be a wake-up call for all of us that this is happening.
Our conversation about political violence continues. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Scott Strauss is the Violence Distinguished Achievement Professor of Political Science and International Studies at UW-Madison. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The most recent spate of political killings in America has us wondering about the connection between these crimes and the increasingly strident partisan rhetoric coming at us from every direction. What's your reaction to the violence we've seen over the past few weeks? Do you think our political rhetoric and polarization have contributed to it? And what do you think should be done to stop this political violence and these hate crimes? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Scott Strauss is with us in this segment. He's a Violence Distinguished Achievement Professor of Political Science and International Studies at UW-Madison. His studies specialize in genocide, political violence, human rights, and African politics. Let's take a phone call. Tom joins us from the top of Wisconsin up in Port Wing. Tom, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Well, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I want to say that extreme negative reporting, which we've seen probably for the first time in the last 2 years, we have TV, radio, and newsprint that can't say anything good about the current administration. This constant smack talk is what is driving a lot of it. And a lot of the people in the media, they don't see it. I think if I asked Wisconsin Public Radio in the last 6 months, can you give me at least six stories that were positive about this administration, they would not be able to do it because there's this extreme negative reporting and talk. And you can't talk bad about your neighbor every day and then 2 months later be shocked when somebody does something extreme.
Okay, Tom, we get it. The media is pushing a lot of this negative information. Many people have pointed to today's intense partisanship and political rhetoric as factors that have fueled people like Cesar Sayoc and Robert Bowers. Before we have our guest respond, Tom, to you, I want to hear from Vice President Mike Pence responding to that sentiment on NBC.
Frankly, people on both sides of the aisle use strong language about our political differences, but I just don't think you can connect it to threats or acts of violence. And I don't think the American people connect it.
Scott, negative things on the news about the Trump administration, political rhetoric. How do they play into the political violence that we're seeing? The vice president doesn't think there's a connection there.
Yeah, look, I think Tom's call is really important. I think that we have very deep polarization in the United States, and that is strongly coloring the institutions that, you know, that ground our democracy, whether that be the media, whether that be political institutions, whether that be courts. And I think you find on both sides that, you know, that everyone thinks the other side is, you know, the media is extremely biased. If you talk to someone who is liberal, they will point to Fox News. You know, Tom, I think, is pointing to WPR or other kinds of media that are anti-Trump. I think, you know, I don't know whether or not there, you know, one station is heavily biased in a political direction. But what I would say is that this kind of distrust in our institutions is very dangerous. And I think it's really important that, you know, views like Tom's are aired and we have a conversation about these things. I think what we're seeing in the media is that again, people who have particular views are drawn to particular stations, and then their ideas are reinforced by those. And I think that's, you know, that's, again, I think of concern for having a dialogue about, as Americans, about what we want for our country.
Do we know whether there's a connection between inflammatory political rhetoric and political violence?
Yeah, I think one has to always be cautious about drawing a causal connection. I mean, I think we don't know exactly what inspired these individuals. We don't know whether or not it was a neo-Nazi online. We don't know whether or not it was, you know, if it was President Trump and his discussion of the caravans. I think we just don't know. And I think even in the literature, this relationship between political speech and acts of violence is a little bit unclear. I think what we can say is that in the aftermath of these kinds of incidents, we should exercise, politicians, everyone, people in the media, should exercise, you know, I think, real caution in the language that they use, and make it very clear that they don't condone these things and they don't want their speech in any way to inspire or reinforce or, you know, or enable those who would commit these acts of violence.
But we hear politicians using so-called dog whistle language. So even when it sounds like they're being reasonable, it's almost like there's a wink and a nudge toward people with radical views. President Trump was talking about globalists, and that's kind of a dog whistle toward the conspiracy theory that says, for example, that the Jews control the entire financial system. Don't we need to push back against that a little bit? And the president saying he's a nationalist.
Yeah, I think we do. I mean, I think that we, you know, I think the president can be careless in the language he uses, and I think the kinds of things that he says or the gestures that he makes can inspire fringe groups, can reinforce their views, or they also could alienate them. I mean, I don't think we know. And people can be inspired to violence because they think the president is not radical enough and is not doing enough. So I think we have to be cautious about making causal connections. But again, I think it is incumbent upon our elected officials to make sure that they don't use language or use gestures or imply that there are Jews behind everything that happens, that it's, you know, the language, I think, of invasion and assault on our country is inflammatory. And I think that's, you know, if I were advising President Trump, I would tell him to stop.
So Robert Bowers was motivated in part by the white nationalist idea of white genocide. What is that?
It's this perception that white culture and the white race are under threat and under assault in the United States and elsewhere. And, you know, I think one of the things that we see that's common across these acts of extreme violence is that people often feel that they are taking action to protect themselves, protect their nation, protect their community. And from everything that I've seen from Robert Bowers, he seems to have been in that mode, you know, that he was you know, protecting his race and protecting his community. And I think the sense of danger, of threat, is often a motivator for violence.
How do other countries around the world view political violence in the U.S., like the incidents that we've been discussing?
Yeah, I think that there is a sense that in the United States, there, you know, these sort of mass shootings and lax gun controls are a particularly American phenomenon. And that said, there are certainly many incidents of political violence around the world, and clearly acts of terrorism as well. And it's not just in the United States. If you think about what happened in Norway with Anders Breivik, and other places, whether it be the United Kingdom or in France, there are certainly other acts of political violence that happen in industrialized democratic countries. I think the way people see the United States, fairly or unfairly, is that it is a place where it's very easy to get access to guns, and that contributes to a culture of violence in the United States.
And you know what? We're out of time. We could continue this discussion for at least another hour. Scott, thank you so much for spending this time with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Scott Straus is the Violence Distinguished Achievement Professor of Political Science and International Studies at UW-Madison. His studies specialize in genocide, political violence, human rights, and African politics. His most recent book is Making and Unmaking Nations, War, Leadership, and Genocide in Modern Africa. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.